For the court is 181926 Callaway Manor Apartments versus the United States, an appeal from a decision of the Court of Federal Claims. Mr. Biondo, you want 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You can wait till you're ready. Are you ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I didn't mean to rush you. I was just trying
Not at
to
all.
Figure out. All right. You may begin.
May it please the court, my name is Mark Blando from Eklund & Blando. With me is co-counsel Bill Roberts from Fagre Baker Daniels, and also my client Lindsay Rupp is here today. The issue before the court today is whether the four partnerships who are the appellants in this matter forfeited or released their accrued claims for breach of contract when they conveyed their properties to the government.
Do you agree that the three contemporaneously signed documents should be read together?
Not at all, Your Honor.
I understand why you argue that the offer should be separately, the offer to convey should be separately construed, but you're saying the other three shouldn't, even though they were simultaneously?
No, the rule that the lower court and the government relies on basically says if you have a group of documents, they can be read together as far as, let's say, there's a similar term that's used in all three. That term should have the same meaning in all of them. But here, they're trying to flip that rule on its head and basically say when you refer to one document, you're necessarily referring to all of the related documents. That just can't be the right rule of contract interpretation. How else could a party refer to only one contract when that's their intention? The parties chose to refer only to the mortgage, which is the security instrument.
But weren't they collectively defined as the loan obligations?
Yes, and that's the term that the parties could have used in this standard form contract, but they didn't. They did not use the term loan obligations. They used the term security instrument, and we have to give meaning to the words that the parties chose. There's a reason that the offer to convey here refers only to the mortgage, because that is the document that was that covered the property that was being conveyed. Again, if they wanted to convey or refer to all three of those documents, all they had to do was refer to all three of them. I mean, if you look at the loan agreement itself, it's got a very helpful guide up front that talks about the three different instruments. That's at Appendix 32. Also, if you look at the regulations, the definition section, they talk about all three of these documents separately. The agency knows what each of these three documents are. They're all defined and delineated very separately. And so if they meant to refer to all three, that's the terminology they would have and should have used. So we have to give, of course, the basic rule of contract interpretation, give meaning to the words the parties use. The parties use the word security instrument, which there's no dispute, refers only to the mortgage. And so we have to enforce that intent.
The offer to convey security uses the language security instruments as described in security instruments. What are the security instruments?
There's no dispute that the security instruments...
There's only one.
There's only one. Right. In some cases, there's more than one mortgage. In some states, it's a mortgage. Other states, it's a deed of trust. That's also clear from the 3560 regulations that define all of these terms. But there's no dispute here that security instrument means mortgage. So you can read that word as mortgage. So to be specific, what the offer to convey is conveying is all of the rights, title, and interest in the contract rights that are described in the mortgage. So really the question is, what contract rights are we talking about that are described in the
Where
mortgage?
Where are you reading from when you say all contract rights in the mortgage?
That's in the offer to convey security, Appendix 90, the key clause at issue. I'm using the word mortgage for security instrument for the court's
right,
convenience.
So you're substituting in the word mortgage, not?
Correct.
It's not in the document.
Correct, yes, because that is the security instrument. Again, there's no debate between the parties and or with the court below that security instrument, and again, consistent with the regulations, the Black's Law Dictionary of Security Instrument. You can look right in the agency's definitions at 3560 that talk about the mortgage or deed of trust as a security instrument.
Didn't the mortgage expressly incorporate the loan agreement?
The mortgage did incorporate the loan agreement, but not the mortgage. I mean, not the promissory note, let alone the prepayment right that was included in that note, let alone any claim that may have come along with that pre-made right. So you can see there's several layers of remoteness that you have to go through. If you're Mr. Rupp, as a reasonable person signing this document and looking at, okay, what are my rights in my contract rights that are described in the mortgage, it wouldn't be reasonable for him to conclude, he certainly wouldn't be on notice, that he's giving up that right. Another important point in that regard is under
the
restatement.
About all the contemporaneous circumstances that surround the offer to convey security. I mean, you satisfied all the statutory requirements, but you still opted not to prepay the loans.
That's not necessarily true, Your Honor. A number of issues there. First of all, we requested to prepay in 2008, and the record is clear that the partnerships did want to get out. They did want to exercise that right to tap into the market value of their properties and bring them to market. And they made the request in 2008. By the time they got to the end of the process, it was about 3 years later, and a lot happened in that interim, including the fact that Mr. Rupp was diagnosed with and later...
Sure, but when you asked to prepay and the government refused to let you, that was a breach.
It was a
breach. At that time, you had the right to file a breach action.
And we did file a breach action, Your Honor. That's why we're here today. And we filed that breach action promptly, certainly within the six-year statute of limitations. We also filed
the suit... You didn't file it right after the breach.
No, we had a six-year statute of limitations, and we used it. Again, a lot happened in that interim, including Mr.
Interim,
Rupp's.
In the interim, you negotiated with the government to get out of the mortgage and the promissory loan and all of that by just turning over this property rather than them foreclosing on you.
Yes, they threatened foreclosure, so the partnerships did not have a lot of other choices. But that doesn't mean that they gave up their right to sue. They enforced their right to sue by bringing this very lawsuit. And they did so within a couple of years.
Hypothetically, if we disagree with you on your view that the promissory loan, the mortgage agreement, and the
promissory note, yes.
All three of these, if we think these are all part and parcel of the same contractual obligations between you and the government on this case, why then doesn't the really broad reference to in the assignment to all our rights, title, and interest in all contract rights, as well as a whole host of other things, particularly given this context where the property was in trouble, you were at risk of foreclosure, and you just wanted to turn it all over to the government, suggests that you were releasing everything to the government in exchange for forgiving your debt. Why isn't that the best reading of that assignment clause?
For several reasons, Your Honor. First of all, because there is no reference to the claim. And under Ginsburg, you do need at least some kind of express or implied designation of a claim.
I know you. So is Ginsburg your best case?
Because it's Ginsburg and the common law principle that it espouses.
Ginsburg is not such an all-encompassing, all-inclusive release. Ginsburg is an assignment from one private party to the other, turning over leases and the right to get rent going forward. But it doesn't say anything. It doesn't have this all-inclusive clause that you have in your assignment. And it's a different situation also because you're turning your property over to the government. They're turning their property over to another private company. It doesn't – those clauses to me, I don't see how the clause in Ginsburg helps you at all. I mean, even beyond that, Ginsburg has a time limitation that the lease is turned over as of this date hereof, which suggests that you're not turning over your right to rent previously. There's no such time limitation in this assignment that assigns all of your rights, title, and interest in all contract rights.
Your Honor, the language is actually strikingly similar, and if anything, the language is more broad in Ginsburg. In Ginsburg, they are assigning all of its right, title, and interest in the tenant leases, which is the contract being assigned.
From and after the date hereof.
Sure, there's a time limit, but the question is for the
within the time limit in yours.
We don't need a time limit, Your Honor. The question is whether the claim.
You do if this is a completely broad release and we read this as releasing everything, and what you're trying to say is, well, this only applies to obligations or rights that arose after this assignment, then you need some kind of time limitation.
Well, we're only looking at an assignment of the question of whether the already accrued claim had been assigned. So as far as the time limit, we're only talking about their already accrued claim. And as we discussed, there's no...
And the claim you're talking about is a breach of contract claim, right?
Yes.
So that's a contract right. That's based upon a contract right.
Well, it is one of the rights in a contract, as the restatement said, but that's a very, that's one of the most basic rules of the restatement, that if you have a, if you're a party to a contract, you have the right to enforce it if the other side doesn't perform.
Sure, but if
but
you
the
agree
separate question is whether
in
that
an
right
assignment,
is...
if you agree in an assignment to turn over all rights related to that contract without any time limitation, why doesn't that on its plain language include a breach of contract claim?
Because
all
under Ginsburg...
No, but...
And Dominion.
Ginsburg is a time-limited case. It has a time limitation that goes from the date of the transfer. Yours doesn't. I don't find Ginsburg useful. If you want to keep relying on it, it's fine. But answer my question. This says all. It doesn't qualify it. It doesn't set aside anything else. It says all contract rights. Why doesn't that release to the government the breach of contract claim?
Because under Dominion and Ginsburg, you need at least an implied designation of the claim. That's the principle that both Ginsburg and Dominion recognize under the common law, that in order to, because a claim is different, it's a chosen action, you need some kind of express or implied designation of the claim.
A claim is different from all other kind of assets you might be turning over?
It is different.
You have to, why?
Because it's a chosen action. It's more of akin to a personal right. And that's what, if you read the Sprint case from the U.S. Supreme Court, it has a long history about that. But the bottom line is Dominion, in applying Ginsburg, recognizes that you do at least need that implied designation. And again, back to the language, both Ginsburg and our case talk about all rights, title, and interest, except that Ginsburg, again, is actually broader because it's all rights, title, and interest in the underlying contract, whereas ours is all rights, title, and interest in certain contracts that are described. And one thing I definitely want to, as I go into my rebuttal time, point out in terms of what contract rights are described in the mortgage, I think it's very helpful to compare the offer to convey with...
This is going back to your argument that these three documents should be read separately and that we should confine ourselves to the mortgage, right? When you're saying
no,
rights are described specifically in the mortgage document?
No, I mean, that's certainly, that point still remains. You have to give meaning to, I don't know how else a party can refer only to the security instrument if their intent is to refer only to the security instrument. That's the language that they use. But what I wanted to point out is if you compare the contract rights that are described in that section 4 of the offer to convey to the mortgage document itself, which is the reference security agreement, that there's the, all of the interests line up. The government, let's remember what the purpose of this agreement is. The government is acquiring the property, so they want to make sure that they get everything that goes along with the property, including any attachments to the contracts, to the property, any improvements, as well as any income or any contract rights stemming from that property.
Does it apply to accrued income?
Sorry, Your Honor?
Does it apply to accrued income? Like Ginsburg, would
sure.
you have a claim?
It's whatever claims that assigner has.
Well, how do we know that you assigned past due rent rather than just future due rent?
We assigned everything we had related to the property at the time of the assignment, but we did not assign the accrued claim because there's simply no language designating that claim. And I also want to briefly mention, if we're talking about the...
That's only if we read these documents separately. If we read them all as part and parcel of the same contractual obligation and you assigned all contract rights, then you assigned it.
No, Your Honor, because you still need something that tells the parties there's a claim. I think one thing that distinguishes Dominion and all these other cases is there was no dispute that the parties to the assignment intended to assign the contract right. And under the restatement, I believe it's section 246, it's the assigner's intention that matters. The question is, did the assignor intend to assign that right? And there's absolutely nothing here to indicate that Mr. Rupp intended to assign that right. Just very briefly on the facts, I want to point out, if we're talking about the facts at all, you know, the government points to the circumstances only because I think they realize there's nothing in the language that actually points to the claims. But if we're talking about the facts, we have to remember that we have a very incomplete factual records. This motion was brought in the infancy of discovery. And if there is any facts that matter, then we're talking about parole evidence, and that would mean that there's an ambiguity. If there's any, if there's two reasonable interpretations, at a minimum, our interpretation is certainly a reasonable one. So if the government's interpretation that they somehow acquired a right to sue itself, and that's really what they're talking about here, that they somehow acquired the claim, meaning a right to sue themselves, if that's a reasonable interpretation somehow, then we have two reasonable interpretations at a minimum, which would mean a latent ambiguity and, in turn, application of the rule of contra proferentum. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll give you 2 minutes for a rebuttal, even though you pretty much used it all up.
Thank you.
May it please the court, there's no ambiguity here. This is a broad release in this offer to convey security, and it encompasses all contract rights by the, held by partnerships.
Well, there is no statement of release. The word release appears nowhere. There's no waiver. There's nothing of that sort.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's consistent with what the parties were attempting to accomplish here, which was moving everything about these properties from partnerships back to the government.
But if intent is relevant, why are we deciding this on a motion to dismiss? Why aren't we sending this back for determinations with respect to it?
Well, I apologize, Your Honor. The trial court concluded correctly that this is a plain language situation. They're not necessarily going to the intent of the parties. I mean, intent is always relevant to contractual interpretation.
You argued that the circumstances say that they impliedly did this. So clearly, and the court referenced that. So clearly, you didn't think this was a plain language case.
No, I don't. I apologize if that's the impression that's been given, but I don't think that's true, Your Honor. I think that the language of the offer to convey is clear, and that it says all contract rights, and that means all contract rights.
Well, it says all contract rights in security instruments, and there's only one security instrument here.
Correct, but that security instrument, as we argue in our briefs, is part of a larger total contract among the parties that encompasses the loan agreement, the promissory note, and the mortgage. And so the...
Why didn't you just draft it that way?
It could have been drafted that way, Your Honor. It's true, but it was not necessary because it here is clear. It does encompass everything. And
I mean, all of the documents that relate to, that were signed on or about the time of the offer to convey security, they all have to do with either conveying the property or extinguishing the loan. There's nothing that I saw that suggested that there was any interest, concern, waiver, release, or anything of that sort with respect to any sort of an accrued cause of action.
No, I don't think that the record shows that there's any discussion of the accrued cause of action.
I mean, I see nothing that suggests or implies that anybody was even thinking about conveying an implied cause of action.
I think that that's probably correct, right? At least the record doesn't show that. But the point is that there was an intent to, it's not necessarily that, and this is Dominion Resources, it's not necessarily that there be a specific reference to the accrued cause of action for it to be signed over. Rather, the point is that all contract rights were intended to be moved, and that's clear from the language of the conveyance, and that encompasses any accrued claim for breach. It's true that it could have been dealt with specifically. We don't disagree with that point, but it wasn't. Everything was moved over. And that's, as we said, part of the plain language interpretation by the court. And it's backed up by the contemporary circumstances, which, as I've pointed out and you've noted, demonstrate the partnership's interest in moving these properties out of their hands. And so it's not the larger umbrella of all contract rights is sufficient to include any accrued claim for breach. And so and that's demonstrated, I think, in part by the foundational documents, the note, the loan agreement, and the mortgage, which are referential to each other. Obviously, the court pointed out, the mortgage expressly incorporates the loan agreement. The promissory note describes itself as part of a total contract of the parties. So
but clearly, you have to concede there, because there was no express transfer of the accrued rights, then you're relying on a theory of implied transfer. I mean, because even Dominion says it's got to either be express or implied.
I suppose that's right, Your Honor. I mean, I guess it depends on what's implied. I don't think Dominion or Ginsburg or the other cases I'm familiar with really parse out what express or implied would mean in this context. The point is that the argument we're making, which I think is consistent.
I thought your argument was that All contract rights is express, but it means everything to do with these three documents and the property at issue here, and they wanted to get rid of it and get rid of all their obligations, so they gave it over to you.
Precisely, Your Honor. Yes, that is express, and that's sufficient. One thing I wanted to point out with respect to Ginsburg, which I mentioned a moment ago, that case is very different for reasons of the contractual language, I think has already been covered. Also, I point out that on the facts in that case, the assignor had already filed a certified claim with the government the day before it signed its assignment. So that emphasizes the importance of the temporal scope of the assignment in that case. That makes it very different from this case.
But again, you're talking about parole evidence as opposed to the documents on their face. And the document, as Judge Lynn pointed out, the documents on its face only refer to the contract rights in the security instrument. They don't even mention the mortgage, right?
They do mention the mortgage. I'm sorry. The offer to convey does specifically reference the security instrument, and our argument is that the security instrument is part of a larger loan obligation.
Right,
and
but
so,
the offer to convey only references, references the security instrument, right?
Yes, because it more generally, if you read the entire agreement, it talks about conveying over the property and the loan being forgiven. So that's demonstrated by different foundational documents. I mean, the loan is not set forth in the amount of the loan is not set forth in the mortgage. It's the promissory note is referenced in the mortgage, which then the promissory note sets forth the terms of the loan and contains a prepayment right. So I think it is true that there's a you do need to read them together, as we contend the trial court correctly did, to understand the total relationship of the parties that was seeking to be terminated.
Let me ask the same question I asked your adversary. In the offer to convey security, the language is convey all right, title, and interest in the contract rights described in security instruments.
Mm-hmm.
What documents do you believe are referred to by security instruments?
Well, I think I agree with my friend that a security instruments in this instance is the mortgage.
Just the mortgage?
Yes.
Not the loan agreement, not the promissory note.
Correct. I would say, and I think this is consistent with his argument, that the loan agreement is the initiating document. They were all executed on the same date, but for conceptual purposes, loan agreement is an initiating document. It contains an agreement that the partnerships will, one, sign a promissory note in exchange for receiving a loan, and two, will sign a mortgage that secures that loan.
But even if all three of those documents that were executed at the same time to start this whole transaction are deemed to be interrelated and part of one transaction, that doesn't necessarily mean that the document here in question called offer to convey security, which refers specifically only to one of those documents, conveys expressly an accrued cause of action relating to a different document.
I think I would disagree slightly, Your Honor, with the formulation, which is to say it's not that they form a single transaction. I think that's a little bit different from what we're saying, was that it forms a single contract. It is a single contractual relationship. And so,
but you just told me a minute ago that the offer to convey security only referred to one of the three documents in the what you're now referring to as a single contract.
In that clause, it only refers to the security as described in security interests held by or insured by the agency. That's right. I agree with that. And obviously, that's what I've just said. But it also then, first of all, as a formal matter, the promissory note is listed in the mortgage itself. So it connects in that sense. And then if you look at the loan agreement and the other documents, it's not possible to disentangle them because of the interlocking rights that the three documents create. And so
Can I ask you this? If your friend's theory is right, that all that was conveyed was the stuff with the mortgage and not the rights associated with the promissory note, wouldn't they still have the right to prepay? Isn't that in the promissory note?
Yes. Yes, they would still, and if it didn't extinguish the promissory note, well, yes, they would, in theory, still have the right to prepay.
They're turning over the
Right.
They're turning over the property.
Right. And so that's in full satisfaction of debt. So that extinguishes the promissory note, which then has the effect of releasing the mortgage. So I think that answers your question by pointing out that one purpose of it, even though, you know, it is described as a security instrument in this subpart four, the effect of this overall offer to convey and the acceptance is to extinguish the promissory note and thereby release the security and the mortgage, which is the mortgage.
But that still leaves us neither here nor there with respect to whatever accrued cause of action there might have been for the breach, the alleged breach that occurred prior to this offer to convey.
Well, no, Your Honor. That accrued claim is subsumed within the larger assignment. So,
as you read the language.
Yes, that is our interpretation of the language, is that all contract rights means all contract rights, and as Dominion Resources says, one of the rights of a party to a contract is the right to sue for breach. And it's not, and Dominion also, I think, makes the point that there's a distinction between the assignment of a contract itself and the assignment of contract rights, and the court in Dominion does that for purposes of distinguishing the Assignment of Claims Act from the Assignment of Contract Act. So it's a little bit different, I freely concede. But there's a difference there, and there's an importance to this term, all contract rights. It means something more than just going forward. It means that it's all the rights that the party had under the contract are now extinguished.
All right, before you sit down, I want to talk about the takings claim, because I don't understand how your argument is consistent with our decision in Chancellor Manor or even in Cienga 4. The fact that there may have been a contract right does not take away the Fifth Amendment right, does it? I mean, Chancellor Manor was pretty specific on that.
Well, I think as we read Pizzell and obviously as we discussed in our brief, the point there is that if the party retains the right to sue for breach of contract, then a contract claim is the appropriate vehicle. I mean, that's our reading of Pizzell.
But that case was predated the Chancellor Manor and Cienga 4. The Chancellor Manor made it clear that a regulatory takings claim could still be asserted based on the value of the rights in the property itself, severed apart from anything that was contracted for with the government.
The issue here, though, Your Honor, is that all of plaintiffs' damages, alleged damages, spring from their contract. So they did not articulate below, and haven't articulated in the briefs here, any damages that are separate from this alleged breach of the prepayment right. Now, they call out their right of use of the properties, but they've never distinguished how that right of use is any different from the prepayment right. What they allege, their whole point in their breach claim, is that they were denied the ability to prepay and put these properties on the market. The ability to prepay is a contractual right.
Right,
and
but
that's,
we said in Chancellor Manor that where the appellant's claim is based on the fact that they agreed to be subject to a temporal moratorium on their right to exclusive possession, and then we have a statute that takes that right away, that just because there was a separate contractual agreement with respect to a loan obligation doesn't take away the takings claim.
Well, Your Honor, I fall back on Pizzell on the language there, and I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
No further questions? Thank you.
Just a few follow-up points in rebuttal, Your Honors. Regarding the contract language, what I was trying to describe earlier, I just want to clarify. When we're trying to figure out what are rights in contract rights described in the mortgage, it really is an odd phrase, but there are actually rights, contract rights described in the mortgage, rights contracts with third parties. And what I'm referring to there is if you look at Appendix 36, right under the property description, there is a long list of rights and interests, including rights in contracts, that go along with that, with the mortgage, i.e. the security instrument. And it very closely mirrors the long list of the 11 types of interests that are being referred to in the offer to convey security. So that's clearly what they're talking about there, not other rights in other contracts that may have been signed at the same time, but were separate agreements not being referred to. There's also, I think it's worthy of noting, there's a reference to insurance claims in part 4.1 of the offer to convey security. So the parties did know how to refer to a claim, if that's what they were trying to get, because there is a reference to insurance claims. As far as the facts go, you know, the government clearly does rely on the facts that shows this is not, in their view, simply a plain language case. And therefore, if there is a dispute as to the facts, at a minimum, we need to finish discovery in this case. There's a lot left to do. And
you need to wrap up, Your Honor.
Yes, finally, Your Honor, regarding the case law.
20 seconds.
Sorry?
20 seconds.
Yes, I see that, Your Honor. Regarding the case law, I think the important thing to remember from all of these cases that in every case where an assignment of a claim was found to have occurred, the parties, the assignor and the assignee, agreed there was no dispute that they were assigning that claim. Here, there is simply no evidence that Mr. Rupp intended to give up this valuable claim. Thank you, Your Honors.
So your request really would be that we would remand for purposes of further development of the record?
That would be an alternative argument. We do think the language of the agreement is clear, that there's simply no reference to claims. You need some kind of a designation of claims. It's clearly not there, so we would reverse on that ground. Alternatively, if the court does agree with the government that the facts matter, then we need to find out what the facts are. So that would be an alternative position.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case will be submitted.